You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with the debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including the devastating effects of illegal cannabis grows, a Shasta County official may have violated the First Amendment, and how this wildfire season stacked up. I'm Maria Carter, JPR's news director.
I'm Jane Vaughn, housing, homelessness, and education reporter.
I'm Roman Battaglia, politics, environment, and science reporter.
And I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
Justin, you reported on a study about the lingering effects of illegal cannabis grows. We have quite a few of those in our region. What does the research say?
Yeah, well, the research is a bit troubling. So this shows that chemicals used in the growing process can actually stay in the soil and water at these sites for potentially years after they're abandoned. So researchers looked at three former cannabis grow sites on national forest land in Northern California. This was an effort by scientists with the U.S. Geological Survey and also the nonprofit Integral Ecology Research Center, which has been looking at this issue for a while. They also had help from the U.S. Forest Service, their law enforcement teams. And the sites they looked at had been abandoned, like I said, by up to 2 years. But what they found was a little shocking. A lot of chemicals used for growing cannabis, as well as other chemicals people, you know, might use just by living in the area, were still present, especially in the topsoil, but also in water nearby.
So what kind of chemicals are we talking about exactly?
There's a whole lot, which you know, they have very complicated names, but they found over 200 chemicals. These included different pesticides, cannabis-related compounds like THC, rubber-related compounds. These are known as plasticizers. And then even pharmaceuticals. And the worry is that some of these chemicals, which can be harmful in high doses to humans and animals, can make it into the food chain, especially because they hang around for so long. And there can be this sort of compounding effect where things like pesticides add up. The paper notes that there are thousands of sites in these types of sites in California alone. So this could be a significant issue.
So are these leftover chemicals harming any wildlife or people?
It's unclear at this point. I spoke with a researcher for the study, and he said this study really laid the framework for starting to look at this wider issue. It is a topic I think people have become more aware of and worried about. You know, previous research found that cannabis pesticides in Northern California had contaminated local waterways. And over the summer, we covered a story of Siskiyou County actually declaring a state of emergency over the widespread use of foreign-labeled pesticides they were finding at sites there. So I think it's an issue that people are becoming interested in.
Okay, well, thanks, Justin. Jane, you had some good news this week. Wildfire season is over in Southwest Oregon.
It is very exciting. Within the past week or so, depending on the county, all of the counties in our region in Southwestern Oregon have officially declared the end of the 2025 wildfire season. I did learn that it's not just rain that determines it. Like, I always kind of think, oh, it's raining. Wildfire season's over.
Yeah.
Right. But I was talking to a bunch of experts, and there are a lot of different factors that go into declaring the actual end of wildfire season, like frost and dew, moisture, there's snow in the mountains. Having cooler temperatures for a longer period of time really helps. So basically those things that are going to be threats to any kind of larger fire starting again. And I will note that the Moon Complex is still burning in Curry County, which is more than 19,000 acres and about a third contained. So that wildfire is still going. But the rest of our region's wildfires are almost or fully contained right now.
Okay, well, how did wildfire season go this year?
Overall, it went pretty well. I talked to a bunch of experts in our region, and they said it was really a pretty mild year. There weren't a lot of huge fires or a lot of huge challenges. The district that covers Jackson and Josephine counties said they had some interesting sort of comparisons to last year. So they responded to 50 more fires this year than they did last year, but they saw 2,000 fewer acres burn. And I think that was partially because because they saw a lot of lightning-caused wildfires, which they were able to snuff out pretty quick. So they were
There was one weekend where there were just a ton of those.
Right. So a lot of fires, but they were small. So that was a particular challenge for firefighters across our region, was those lightning-caused wildfires. They also said that we didn't really see a heat wave early in the summer that we usually see, and so that contributed to not seeing as much large fire growth. It just wasn't quite as hot early on.
It felt like we had some heat waves.
I know. That's what the experts said, at least not early on in the summer. There were some concerns initially about staffing with the Coos Forest Protective Association on the coast, but they said they were able to staff up. All the districts I talked to were able to be staffed as they needed, so that obviously really helps when you have all the people you need. And the Coos Forest Protective Association said that over 96% of their fires were suppressed at 10 acres or less. So there's definitely some successes this year.
And what should listeners still watch out for?
Well, I'm going to sound like a huge bummer, but basically it's now time to get ready for the next wildfire season. These experts say that now is the time to start doing things like clearing defensible space around your home, removing fuels, preparing for next year. All those things really help for next wildfire season. They also had some good advice for burning debris piles, which is now allowed and is good to do, again, to sort of clear that defensible space and remove those fuels. But they said to be really careful if you're burning. Wildfires can occur year-round, especially on windy days. We still have some warm, dry days in the fall. And so they recommended never leaving those piles unattended, checking in with your local fire department. You might need to obtain a permit, making sure those piles are fully extinguished when you're done. And those are all to prevent more wildfires from happening. And I also think it's interesting that California is still in peak wildfire season. They've had some fall weather, some rain, but they're still fully staffed. Wildfire season is not over in California. I talked to an expert there who said that they have seen more activity in recent years going later into the year, into those months that they traditionally haven't considered fire season months. So they're still ready to go. So be careful if you're still in California.
And we're still ready.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks, Jane. Roman, you brought us a story about the Shasta County Department of Elections, and this time it wasn't about the elections itself or vote counting or anything like that. What's going on down there?
Yeah, so this was related to the county clerk who was appointed in May, Clint Curtis. He basically removed the Shasta Scout, a news outlet down there, from their press release distribution list that they send out emails with press releases on them. And the Shasta Scout is this nonprofit news outlet that started a few years ago. They've obviously been covering the elections department. There's a lot of changes for those who don't know. In Shasta County, there's been a lot of drama at the elections department and efforts and stuff. So they've been covering that, including the changes made by Clint Curtis. He's been kind of trying to overhaul the elections department, and there's a lot of changes he's been trying to make, including some reporting that apparently has not made him necessarily happy. They reported that they got a call from the assistant registrar of voters sort of threatening them, saying they were meddling in elections and warning them not to. So the Shasta Scout has not been getting recent press releases. They got assistance from the First Amendment Coalition, which their lawyer sent a letter to the Department of Elections threatening a lawsuit, asking them to, you know, restore access. And the important thing that happened this week was there was a special meeting by county supervisors. They had a closed session to talk about this specifically, and then they voted unanimously to condemn Curtis's actions for removing them. They, you know, said they respect the freedom of the press and told him to restore the access and ensure transparency.
So let's back up a minute. Why did the county clerk remove the Shasta Scout from the press release list?
Yeah, I talked to him over email this week. He claimed basically that the Shasta Scout is left-wing and spreading their message of left-wing. At one point he said, I don't care. They could print the Communist Manifesto if they wanted to. But his real concern about it was them specifically doing it as a 501c3 nonprofit, which, according to the IRS, are not supposed to be political. They're not supposed to promote, you know, political stuff. So he said that they shouldn't be operating as a charity and said that this was a time to take a stand. The Shasta Scout obviously fights back against those claims. They say they're focused on fact-based reporting. They are also a member of the Institute for Nonprofit News, which I've looked at their website. They have these membership standards, which do say you need to be fact-based and report in your community, and you can't promote any policies beyond the First Amendment and freedom of speech. So, you know, they are part of that stuff. Curtis did say that he did report the Shasta Scout to the IRS and the Department of Justice to investigate them, I guess.
Yeah, and I've worked at two places that were members of the Institute for Nonprofit News, and I think we did really straightforward news coverage.
I mean, JPR is also a nonprofit.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to assume more people, or most people listening, are not journalists themselves. Why is being on this press release email list, like, why getting copied on a like an email? Why is that so important?
Yeah, I think some people might think that, oh, well, why does this matter that much? I mean, you're just getting an email and you're not getting those emails anymore. But, you know, at least for the Shasta Scout, that is important. It's important to get this critical information about elections. There's a lot of releases, especially from the Shasta County Department of Elections, that get sent out related to all sorts of stuff that's been happening, including talks with the Secretary of State, the way the election system is changing, and people really want to know about what's happening in Shasta County. And so it's our job as the press to take that information and disseminate it to the general public so people know what's going on. You know, without that, that hampers the Shasta Scout's ability to get that information. He also had claimed that all these press releases were posted on the website, but that was not the case when I looked at it. A lot of them were missing. So if you weren't on this list, you could miss out. I also talked to the editor of the Shasta Scout, and she said this was sort of a slippery slope, that they were worried that this was just the first step and that they could also be, you know, barred from attending press conferences or not being allowed to enter the elections building on election night or something. So they wouldn't really be able to do the reporting that they've been doing. And they've been doing a lot of investigative reporting on the changes that Clint Curtis has made. So it's kind of important to be able to have that access to be able to, you know, report on what you need to report on and get that stuff out.
So now that the county supervisors have condemned that decision, what happens next?
So basically, Curtis, and this is what he had said originally when they first sent, the First Amendment Coalition sent an email out to Clint Curtis. His response was, well, we're just not going to use the press distribution list anymore while we figure this out. And now he confirmed that he's just not going to use that email list anymore. So, you know, the Shasta Scout's not getting emails, but no one else is.
We're not also getting those emails.
No one else is going to get emails, which is something he can do. Instead, he's going to post everything on the website. He had said that, you know, I emailed him about this. He had said the one press releases that were not posted on the website were not there because of a staffing change, and they kind of got lost in the shuffle, but they have been added now. And he has since done an interview with the Shasta Scouts, so he has talked to them. You know, one thing I am waiting on, and I'm kind of interested to see what it is, I'm waiting on a public records request to see all of the emails that were on that list originally. You know, while it's not being used anymore, I am kind of curious about who else was on there that could be considered, you know, bias. In Shasta County, there are a lot of these citizen journalists that, you know, say they're journalists, and then they are, you know, very openly partisan, and they come up and speak in open session about, you know, very political things. And I'm kind of curious if they're on that email list while the Shasta Scout was kicked off of it.
Well, so a potential tease for future story. Thanks, Roman. That's it for The Debrief this week. Thanks for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions for things we should cover in the future through our news tip line. That's on our website, ijpr.org. You can also give there. And you can find this program and more at jeffexchange.org or on your favorite podcast platform.